And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm your host, Tim Capper, along with my co-host, Adam Markowitz. Welcome, welcome.
As always.
Last week, dude. Oh, my God. Last week of the regular season. And it's nothing is completely decided yet. Not everything, at least. We still have
at least one game's going to mean something.
At least one game's going to mean something. That's right.
The other six of them might suck, but one of them's going to mean something.
So the game itself is going to be on Saturday night. You know, technically the Chicago Rush have not clinched, the Central Division, spot, even though Spokane is selling tickets to the game.
And of course, yeah, we know all four of the seeds in the American Conference are still up in the air. So
yes.
there is some value to these games.
That's right. That is correct.
Let's not belittle all of them.
No.
We'll just belittle the ones that really truly suck.
Yes, which we will do at the end of the show. But you know what? When it comes to dueling interviews, I think this week is a first for us. I don't think we've ever had dueling interviews. As everybody knows who follows arena football, this week it's a huge game. It's basically a play-in. It is you win and you're in, you lose and you go home. Predators voodoo. And that's probably the thing. That's one of the, you know, even though put the records aside, it's going to be
they're 0-0 now.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if it's the last week of the season or not. We were lucky to be able to speak with quarterback Chris Dixon. And Adam was lucky to speak with Coach Plank. Dude, and you guys are going to be able to hear this in just the next couple of minutes, the first interview, and then we're going to go to the second one. Dueling interviews. I don't know how else to explain it without giving it away, but you guys, this, you'll like this. You'll like these interviews. And I said, it's what we do for you guys. It's make sure that we have, interviews that are up to date and, mean something for that week. A few things did come about and we'll talk about it and then we'll get to the first interview. We want to go and talk about the AFL Global, announcement. AFL Global has announced the All-Star Games that are going to be taking place in Honolulu in November, and the game, which has not had a date yet, for Spokane in China. I know.
A little further away than Spokane.
in China. They have put out I don't remember them doing this before. I know they do this now for the Hall of Fame choices, but AFL Global, which by the way is a totally separate entity to the Arena Football League, completely separate, their money is separate, etc. They have put out a basically your own voting booth of who you would choose, American and National Conference players, to represent the Arena Football League and the Arena Football game in these two All-Star games. You can go to the website now, afl-global.com. Make your choices. You do have to fill out some information at the end, but I think it's well worth it. And they are going to be giving us updates according to what their Twitter feed said earlier today. So, when you saw it, Adam, I mean, first off, have you voted yet?
Yes.
Same here. I have voted.
Yes. I voted yesterday.
Yeah, I voted also. First impressions. I think it's pretty neat. I mean, it's not just choose a radio button and a player, you actually can have player pictures next to them.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of the design of it happened to be very good, but the concept of it is really it's really very interesting. You know what these teams or team are going to do together, and whether all these guys actually will be assembled on the same field would be pretty damn interesting.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, it would be probably. I mean, obviously, practice time and all that is going to be tough, but it would probably be one of the better AFL teams ever assembled if truly all the best guys were going. So, again, it's a very interesting concept. I don't know exactly why they're trying to play the game in Honolulu, but, you know, that's something that we'll be talking about as we get through the Arena Bowl in the offseason. But, you know, it's definitely an interesting concept, and just even if nothing else, just the recognition of it, to be recognized as quote, an AFL All-Star. There's something to be said in the NFL about being a Pro Bowler, and baseball being a member of the All-Star team.
Yeah.
Even if you're not playing in the game, or even in this case, if a game isn't ever even played, even though we do expect it to be played, just something about that recognition of saying, you know what, the fans think I'm an All-Star.
Exactly. And I think one of the cool things about it is that, you know, you get recognized for being first team this or second team that. You know, you're going to be able to be recognized as an All-Star for the first time since 1993.
Yeah, and by fans, too, not just by, you know, some selection committees.
Exactly. Exactly. I totally agree. Yeah, that's a very important piece of that, Adam, and I'm glad that they are asking the fans' input on this. For those of you who don't know, it is in our history section. You can look it up. The last All-Star game occurred, as I said, in 1993 in Des Moines, Iowa. The reason why it actually happened was because it was done as a charity event for some, it was a natural disaster that occurred in Iowa during that, sometime that year. It was a flood that occurred, and all the monies raised went towards, like the Red Cross type of thing or whatever it was. We got the box score, we add the rosters. It's very interesting to see the rosters, actually, Adam, and see the two head coaches that were actually chosen for this game. But these guys took it very, very seriously from what the story says. So if this can go off without a hitch, even the first game in Hawaii, which I'm guessing, Adam, and I don't know what you're thinking, I think it's probably played at the same arena where the old AF2 Hawaii Islanders played, I would imagine.
Probably where they have the that college basketball tournament, yes, the Chaminade thing.
Yep. If it goes off without a hitch, could this become a regular thing? I don't see why not.
I mean, I don't necessarily see why though. Yeah, it's the same argument, because this is clearly something that's being done to promote AFL Global. Once AFL Global is up and running, I don't know if there's necessarily a need for this, because it doesn't seem like this is anything that the Arena Football League is set to adopt at this point. This is, again, something that's completely separate from the Arena Football League, and, you know, the AFL itself has not promoted this whatsoever.
No, they have not.
And there's no sign that they're going to anytime in the near future either.
No, and it makes me wonder if it's because they're staying as two separate entities. We do know that there is nothing in the current collective bargaining agreement talking about, you know, all-star game play, compensation, et cetera, et cetera. We were able to check and did see that it was listed in the 2002 to 2008, and then the extension of the CBA before the league folded, in 2009. So the information was there on how much they were being paid. So we don't know the structure of that. We're guessing that we will find it in the next couple of weeks.
Well, it's probably something that's going to need to be bargained between the AFLPU and AFL Global, even with the AFL.
Exactly. Yeah. My only concern would be is that if the CBA is with the AFL, how is it done specifically through the AFL Global? Because
that's where this is going to get messy.
Yeah, exactly. Because my thought was, would the league or the AFLPU want to have the CBA reopened to make addendums and whatnot, but we hope to get some more information for you if possible.
It does happen in sports. It's not something unprecedented to have a CBA written and then have a CBA or, you know, a piece of a CBA renegotiated. We see it all the time. For example, when hockey changed over its division structure, that had to go through the NHLPA.
Exactly.
It's not anything out of the ordinary, and it would not be anything that would be any cause for any major concern, unless, of course, the two sides couldn't come to some sort of an agreement. But what's going to have to happen is the AFL is going to have to come to an agreement with AFL Global, and then the two together are going to have to come to an agreement with the players' union.
Exactly.
So this could get hairy, and there really isn't a lot of time to decide it, knowing that they're trying to play this game here in just a few short months.
Exactly.
And it seems like a long way away, but it really isn't.
No, it's not. It's all logistics and getting the players and where they're going to stay, et cetera, and, you know, the reason why we're mentioning this is that, you know, they did put out the announcement, and then they put out an update. And this is where we happen to see, maybe Adam and I saw that there may have been a couple of issues that were not looked at or they're currently still looking at. From the AFL Global Arena All-Star update, he goes, They go, China is a very different model of culture, economics, and government regulations. But we are firmly committed to presenting our game in tandem with our AFL players and in accordance with their U.S.-based union agreements and salary structure. That right there, and it's in bold, obviously. So if it's in bold, they're trying to make sure that it stands out. As I said, that's where you and I, Adam, noticed that there may be not all the I's weren't dotted, the T's haven't been crossed yet, and it's, as you said, it's something that they have to look into.
Yeah, and there was also an article published by our good buddy Vaughn who works in Philadelphia, saying that the league basically had not signed off on this either. So, again, there's a lot of drama here that needs to be sorted out before this actually is going to end up happening. And hopefully it ends up happening. You know, hopefully they get through the drama sooner than later, and hopefully they end up just taking care of this without us in the media having to really do much in the way of discussing it.
Exactly. And we do have a lot more to come up in the show. As we mentioned at the very beginning, that there is a very significant game this week. Basically, it is the game, Adam has put it as possibly the most important game in the Amway Center's history, and for the Orlando Predators. New Orleans, Orlando, win and you're in the playoffs. But what we wanted to do is to try to get the feel of the two teams when it comes to the game this week. And so what we did is we sent out asked Chris Dixon, the quarterback of the New Orleans Voodoo, to be on the show with us. And I interviewed him the other night, and it was a very, very interesting and very telling interview. So what we're going to do, we're going to play that that first interview now, and when we get back, we'll continue, and then we'll play the Coach Plank interview a little bit later in the show. So enjoy. Well, I think this is what every athlete wants. They want to be able to go into the last game of the regular season and say, you know what, we win, we're in, and we get to the playoffs. You know, we finally reach that next level. Well, on the line with us right now is Chris Dixon. He is the quarterback for the New Orleans Voodoo. You have quite a bit of a resume, Chris. I mean, you are a 4-time IFL champion. You are a 2-time United Bowl MVP. You're a 3-time IFL MVP. How is it to be called a rookie in arena football, considering you've been in indoor football for such a long time?
It was weird at first, just something to get used to. Usually I'm the older guy in the league. This year I was a younger guy, considered the younger guy, but I've learned a lot this season from a lot of people, the different angles, the different approaches to the game when it comes to the arena game. Every game has been a learning experience, and it's been pretty good to get my first starts and get them out of the way and get some of those things. I feel like a rookie at times because I get those jitters again that I used to get my rookie year, but they're slowly but surely calming down. Last game I wasn't as nervous maybe as I was the first game that I started, but things are starting to fall into place, and each week I think I've improved a lot week in and week out.
Now, what people may not know is that you were the first indoor football player to ever throw for 500 career touchdowns. You come into the Arena Football League where you have Aaron Garcia, who's thrown for over 1,200. Have you spoken to him? Has he given you any type of pointers? He's playing for the team you used to play for, but have you two crossed paths in any way?
Yeah, I spent 4 weeks watching Aaron prepare for games when I got hurt in Orlando. I got to watch him prepare for games and things like that. And the way he is a leader, I learned a little bit when I was down there from him, the different approaches, the different throws he makes. You get to learn, a little bit from a veteran guy now, to have that opportunity to play against him. I think it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, for those fans who haven't seen you play, I think you have one of the most unique approaches to the game itself. You are one of the very few Arena Football League quarterbacks that actually, I would say probably 75% of the time, if not more, you're dropped back in the shotgun, aren't you?
Yeah. it's been something I've done for the last 12 years. It's a little comfortable. You know, you can do a lot out of it. We're just experiencing with it, you know, in the Arena League. So, you know, Coach Pio is definitely getting his own learning experience with it. And, you know, we've had success this year with it. We just, you know, once I think we're starting to figure it out a little bit, trying to clean it up as much as we can to adjust to this arena game. But yeah, I'm one of few who are in the shotgun this year.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to, you know, this season itself, you started off with the Orlando Predators and you were transitioned over to New Orleans. How is it the difference between being in Orlando compared to being in New Orleans?
The fan base is bigger in Orlando. We all know that. Coaching staffs are definitely different. You know, you play for a more offensive head coach in New Orleans and a defensive head coach in, you know, Orlando, and you get kind of, you know, different sides. I think when you play for a defensive head coach, you get the more motivator, you know, I want, you know, kind of a motivational type of head coach, you know, and the more aggressive head coach, mm-hmm. you know, in our New Orleans, you get more of the, you know, mentally strong, you know, patience, more like head coach in New Orleans. So, I mean, that's what you get when you play for an offensive and defensive coaches, you know. So, you know, we're definitely, you know, definitely a big turnaround difference for me as a quarterback, because I actually have a quarterback as my head coach. So it's definitely been a great experience to actually have that.
How disheartening was it for you to go? I mean, you came in, I think it was your first start of the year, if I'm not mistaken, and you separate your shoulder on a fantastic run, by the way, but you separated your shoulder at the same time. How was it going through that process and rehabbing and getting back into playing shape?
The first couple of days was emotional. I didn't know if I was going to come back this year, honestly. You know, back and forth to the doctor's offices, never knew really what would happen, what was going on. You know, when you got trainers telling you, you might be done for the year, mm-hmm. you might be, you know, giving you all the scenarios, it's always rough. You know, you're going through it by yourself with no real family around to help you through it. It was rough, you know. But, I mean, the credit a lot of my homeboys in Orlando, man, I had great support to come back. You know, Jason Gellers, you know, really spent time with me, you know, worked out with me a few times to get me to throw again. You know, they did a great job of, you know, getting, you know, me back on, you know, in terms of, you know, my teammates and a lot of the support from those guys, you know, kind of pushed me to want to come back further and quicker. And, you know, I was ready to go actually earlier than I thought.
And then, you know, with the transition, because you were hurt and whatnot, you know, Predators bring in, you know, one of the all-time greats in Aaron Garcia, and then all of a sudden, you're playing, you know, I'm sure you're not 100%, your playing time basically is nil. Then you get the opportunity, and you're traded to New Orleans. What was your reaction to saying, okay, first, you know, I've come from, you know, the IFL this year to a new league, and then I get traded to another team, but you must have had some, you know, once you heard it, you may have found some positives out of that, right?
Well, yeah, you know, it was not even a trade. Let me straighten that up. I got cut.
Okay.
And I never had the chance to prove myself as a quarterback. You know, I came off IR. I never got to practice one day to prove that I belong on the team. You know, and you know, that experience right there was maybe the hardest thing I've probably been through in my careers. Not only, you know, was I hurt, but I never had the chance to go out to the field and show that I was ready to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to come off IR, the doctor tell you on Tuesday, you approved, you're ready to go, be put on recallable on Wednesday, you know, or Thursday, and you're cut on Friday. You get a phone call saying you're cut. You know, it was rough. It was emotional. You know, that was a hard time for me because I worked so hard to come back only to hear that, oh, we're going to cut you on Friday without even seeing what I can do or if I'm ready to play or what's going on with me. You know, it was a decision made without even really talking to me about it. So, you know, it is what it is. I don't hold hard feelings, grudges. You know, you just move on and you get ready. And Coach P.O. called me right after what happened to Rocco the night, you know, I got cut, and Noah asked me to come to New Orleans, and next week I was in New Orleans.
That's fantastic. So no animosity at all, Chris? Are you sure? Not just a smidge?
You know, as much as I want to hold a lot of grudges, I have a lot of – I want to win. I want to get in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, personally, it is satisfying to go play this game in Orlando to get in the playoffs. I'm not going to lie to you. It is ideal situation for any man that's in my situation.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
To have the opportunity to go back to Orlando, you know, it wouldn't make me happy to be the one to be a part of keeping them out of the playoffs. But at the same time, it's not a grudge that I'm holding because, you know, I don't really try to hold grudges. I mean, even if it was Arizona or San Jose, I would want to win this game so that we can be in the playoffs. We've had a lot of chances, and you know, we've come so close but didn't finish them. And I feel like something's with us that wants to give us a chance, and we got another one. And now we just need to take advantage of it. And I just think that it's time to, you know, put our own individual wants and needs to the side and start making it about the team. And you know, this game, yeah, do I want to do well and win this game? Yeah, but I can't do it without my teammates. So I don't want to make it a personal battle. It's a team battle that there's just another team or a schedule that we have to beat. You know, it's win or go home.
Exactly.
I love my kids, expect to see them, want to be around them, want to see my daughter, want to hold her, want to see my son and hold them. But at the same time, daddy has a job to do and I want to finish it. And I want to see it all the way through it. You know, I'm kind of excited about that.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it's very possible, and I don't know indoor records when it comes to, you know, Matt, you know, talking about the indoor leagues and the Arena Football League, but it's very possible you might, if, you know, going down the line, everything works out, you pull off that 3-0 record in the playoffs, you could become the first ever player to win an Arena Bowl championship and an indoor championship. Has that ever crossed your mind?
It crossed my mind when I first came in this league because it's still my goal.
Yeah.
I do want to do that. I do want to be that guy who's done it. And I think I have the skill set and the talent to help a team do that, you know. And I think right now we take it one game at a time. I mean, if you think about every game, I mean, Orlando, we have a chance. I mean, we get Philly. We was just in a game with Philly weeks ago. We lost the last 5 seconds. We held the lead the whole game except the last 5 seconds.
Yep.
We just gave Jacksonville a game. We beat Tampa, you know. And, I mean, lo and behold, everybody expects Arizona to be there. If we get Arizona, I mean, it's either put up or shut up when you get to that game.
Exactly.
You know, and yeah. We're going to put up and compete, or we just need to shut up and just get out of the way. But I don't think my teammates are the type to just lay down for anybody. So we're going to compete. We're going to give them a game. And whatever happens, you know, just give ourselves a chance to win. And, I mean – we have a great chance. I mean, do I think that we can't get there? Oh, easily. We get in the playoffs, we have a chance. I mean, we've given ourselves chances in every game this year, you know, since the middle of the season. And that's all we got to keep doing, keep plucking.
Exactly.
We'll be fine.
Exactly. And we did speak with Coach O'Hara a few weeks ago. He was talking about his relationship, what it came to. You know, he was in Orlando as the head coach. He did well. He was fired and came over to New Orleans. Now you are doing the exact same thing. What's funny, I don't know if you guys this year have used any sort of bulletin board material to get you guys hyped for the game. There was an interview the other day by
–
what's that, Chris?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
An interview by who?
Well, we spoke with there was an interview this past week done by former Predators managing partner Brett Bushy, and he happened to mention whether he was kidding or not. So I'm just paraphrasing here, Chris. I'm just paraphrasing. So, and he was talking about last week's game, and he goes, you know, the good thing about this week is that we could A, win this game, and we could send Coach Pat O'Hara, basically to go play golf. Now, when you hear that type of thing as a quarterback of the opposing team for a team that you played before, would you be able to use that type of thing as bulletin board material, or is like you just need to concentrate on the goal ahead?
I think it's already, if you're not ready for this game, without that, you're playing this game for the wrong reason.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, I'm not gonna wish bad on anybody, but we all know Brett Bushy's situation already.
Yeah.
So
yes,
I'm not
worried
about it. He's worried about the city of Orlando right now instead of worrying about us. But if you're not ready for this game, I don't know what you're ready for.
Yeah.
You know, we got a lot of bulletin board material just naturally because we got to put on a, you know, we got to put on a white jersey. They got to put on a black jersey, and we already going head to head right there. So, I mean, if you're not ready for this game, I don't know what you're playing it for. You know, and I agree with you. I mean, that is a great bulletin board type thing. But, you know, if Brett Bushy was still there, yeah, I would have more want about that. Mm-hmm. I would take that or more in. But since he has his own problems right now, I think he needs to worry about worrying about golfing. I think he's already golfing.
It's nice, Chris.
He ain't got to go sell another. He ain't got to go sell another advertising because I think he's still trying to figure out if it's the city of Orlando's or his.
Oh,
but,
yeah. No animosity at all there, Chris. Not at all.
Nah, you know, I got my own feelings about Brett Bushy and company.
Yeah.
You know, about, I love Brett. I think Brett is a great guy, you know. But I mean, for him to say something like that, I think is, you know, disrespectful. And of course, I'm gonna ride with Coach P.O. before I ride with Brett Bushy any day right now.
Exactly.
So if he has his feelings, I mean, I can easily say more, but, you know, I like Brett Bushy. I never had a real problem with him. I'm not gonna say I do, but for him to say what he said, I gotta ride with my coach in this instant, and, you know, I got his back to the fullest.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I will admit, you have a very, you have impressed me as a fan of arena football quite a bit. I love your style of play, Chris. And you seem to be an up-and-coming quarterback. I wish you nothing but the best, obviously, this week, but also in your future, because I think you do have a great future in the Arena Football League, and I think you can become one of the future names in the Arena Football League. So, again, good luck to you, and, have fun this week versus the Predators.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Adam, very telling interview. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, this is a kid that's got a big, big fat chip on his shoulder right now, and this is just one of the many indicators that we have gotten from both sides that this is more than just a game and this is more than just a de facto playoff game. This is something that is very, even though nobody's saying it, this is something that is very, very personal, that is going to inevitably boil over onto the field in some respect.
And, you know, it's, as I said, it's, I asked them multiple times. I said, you know, this isn't personal, but, you know, it just, something came off. You know, the history, it's funny, the history that Dixon has, not only with the Predators, but also with the Voodoo. I mean, it melts, you know, it's perfect. It melts perfectly in there. And, you know, another good example of this, would be, you know, to fuel the fire a little bit more. We have a couple of quotes that were given out this past week. We'll play those for you. But it's, you know, as I said, this is more than just a game. More than just a game. So it's, you just wait till you guys hear the Coach Plank interview. we'll do that in a couple of minutes. But wow. This may have been, Adam, the final curtain call in the small history of the Superdome and the Arena Football League. As we know, speaking of the Voodoo have finally completed their home season, and, you know, the last six games were played at the New Orleans Superdome. What I wanted to do is to gauge these two teams, you know, and check, you know, Voodoo versus the Knight when they played. You know, both small histories, totally two different types of arena football, technically. I mean
it was two decades ago.
Yeah, exactly. So the Voodoo, the Knight itself, in the two seasons, and remember, this is the New Orleans Knight team that really sucked. I mean, bad, bad, bad. New Orleans and the Knight ended up going 3-7 at the Superdome. The Voodoo ended up going 2-4 at the Superdome. Well, you know what? I gotta say this, Adam. So if we were to go by just those records alone, Adam. I guess two wins does beat three wins when it comes to.
Three and seven's
yeah. Overall winning percentage, but I guess the New Orleans Knight this year at least happened to get the nod because they have three wins. What was telling though was the attendance. The New Orleans Voodoo averaged 5,354 people over those six games. The Knight averaged 8,844 people with a one-time high of 14,000 people versus the Orlando Predators. 14,000 to see an Arena Football League game at the Dome.
Yeah, and that's clearly, you know, not something you were going to see this year, even though we did have one awesome crowd in Tampa Bay last week.
Yes.
It's not exactly what you're going to see. And by the way, I'll make the argument that this Voodoo team would hold the advantage over that New Orleans team due to record against common opponents. The Knight never beat Tampa Bay or Orlando.
And what's funny, going through all these teams that were played, the only team that was around and was able to play them at the Superdome was Tampa Bay Storm. That was the only team that played the New Orleans Arena Football League teams in the Superdome each time. I think
that's not true.
No?
No. New Orleans Orlando in 92 at home. And then played the first game of this year. Oh, no, you're right. I'm sorry. That game was in New Orleans.
Yeah,
Arena.
I was about to say.
My bad.
Yeah, Superdome. So, goodbye, AFL Superdome. I don't think we ever want to see you again.
Sure, if we could put 60,000 people in there, it'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. Won't happen.
You take the whole season of fans and you wouldn't have that.
Yep, 32,000. Maybe if you merge the two. Well, no, say the Knight had it. Yeah. Something information that came across that you were able to break. You know, we had the story last week about Brett Bushy and him selling his stake in the Orlando Predators. But you were able to get some information about, it's very possible that Brett Bushy is not done as far as the Arena Football League goes.
Yeah, you kind of had the feeling that he's never going away in this league by any stretch of the imagination. This is a game that's kind of in his blood. And even though this journey in Orlando is over with, our sources, and really it's almost to the point that it's basically just totally public knowledge at this point, Brett Bushy's looking to put a team in Los Angeles. And it's a matter of whether he's going to have the time, the backing, the funds, the location, all that in order by the time the Arena Bowl has come by, and the timing of all this news coming out about Los Angeles is very peculiar because it comes just a couple days after Jerry Kurz announced that there were going to be two new expansion teams named during Arena Bowl week. Mm-hmm. We now have a very, very good idea that LA is going to be one of them. The other one there's still a lot of speculation about could be Brooklyn, could be Portland. You know, the idea of Milwaukee, even though that wouldn't, I guess, technically be an expansion team,
right,
is still out there. So the other possibilities for expansion are still definitely out there, but we know now that LA is at least one of the targets and that Brett Bushy is going to be not a majority owner of the team by any stretch of the imagination, but likely once again in a very similar capacity to what he has had both in Orlando and in his short time with the Arizona Rattlers as the – I don't know whether he had the title of managing partner with the Rattlers, but he had the same sort of – job description and was really the face at the forefront of the ownership of both teams.
Exactly. And from what we've noticed, and you know, some people have asked, maybe Casey Wasserman would be money. In my opinion, no. I mean, there is a...
It is definitely not Casey Wasserman. Rule that out.
Yeah, because there is a YouTube video that is out there, and he was asked specifically about the Arena Football League, you know, a couple of years, I guess, since it failed and whatnot. And he was not happy. In any way, shape, or form, it is a very telling interview.
And yeah, Casey Wasserman was definitely amongst the owners at the end of 2008 that wanted to play in 2009, come hell or high water.
Right.
And I can understand why he's bitter. And it's really just a totally different league at this point. So I can understand why he wouldn't want to get into it, because let's face the facts here. I don't think there's a single team that's making money. Maybe there is, but I really have a hard time believing it, that there's any team in this in this AFL single entity mode, especially when you're talking about each team having to pick up 1/13th of the cost of the Chicago Rush.
Yeah.
I sincerely doubt that there's any team out there that's going to turn a legitimate profit in 2013.
If they do come about, we will obviously we'll hear about it at Arena Bowl. We'll find out where they're going to be playing, because could they play at the Staples Center? I mean,
I mean, the best grumblings right now at this point are that perhaps the team would be in Anaheim.
Yeah.
So not actually Los Angeles. I don't know whether they would be called the Anaheim Piranhas or whatever, or whether they would be called the Los Angeles, whether it be Avengers or whatever.
No, they would be the LA Avengers. I'll get that out. LA Avengers of Anaheim. Hey, if the Angels can do it, why can't they?
Why not?
Why not? But yeah.
You know, I like one of our posters put on the message boards. They call them the Avenging Piranhas. I like that.
There you go. The Avenging Piranhas of LA Anaheim.
Somehow I don't think the LA Arena fans is going to stick though.
No. I don't think we even have the money to.
No, I don't think we're all ponying that up.
No. Well, you know what? We could sort of do what the IOA did. You know, it could be, presented by Arena Fan, I guess, but, that would be one of the weirdest team names ever.
Unless $17 is going to buy it, I don't think we're going to manage to pull that one off.
Maybe we can buy an ad in there, maybe we can buy an ad. Oh, Dasher Board. How about that?
There you go.
Yeah, that's our next Kickstarter thing, is a ad on, on Kickstarter, and we'll get an ad on the Dasher Boards at Arena Bowl. Wouldn't that be interesting? No, it won't. Won't happen. but as far as, you know, it's true. We could have more than two teams joining the league next year. Commissioner Kurz didn't make this announcement during his weekly TV airtime during the CBS Sportsnet broadcast. Another interesting thing that was announced almost same time as that was, Adam, was that for the first time, there is going to be an Arena Bowl post-game show, an actual post-game show. They'll go from the main network over to CBS Sports Network, and that's where the post-game show is going to be held. So if you have both those channels and you're watching the game on the main network on CBS, you'll be able to switch over. You'll be able to see the trophy presentation, and as we've seen in past years, won't have to do it twice. Won't, you know what I mean? Or do it rushed, which we have seen before many a time. So pretty big, you know, I think them being the a partner of the AFL, I say kudos to them to getting that that post-game show.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good idea. It wouldn't be the first time that the trophy presentation's been on TV, but, you know, it's interesting. Personally speaking, it's not going to make a bit of difference to me, except they're probably going to keep us off the field longer.
Yeah.
To be able to finish doing our jobs, but, you know, yeah, great for the fans. How well is it going to draw on TV? I think pretty poorly, because the truth of the matter is the last second ticks off the clock at the Arena Bowl, there's really not that much more to talk about. Recapping the game is great, but I mean, how interesting could it possibly be? But we'll see. I give CBS, the CBS and CBS Sports Network, credit for being willing to do this. Of course, I don't know how much money the AFL is paying for that time slot, but we are probably paying for it and probably paying a nice healthy, chunk of change for it. But it's a nice little idea to tie a little bow on the 2013 season.
I agree. And it should be very interesting to see what, how much time is actually allocated for this to occur. So I would imagine this would be from the, you know, give it 2.5 hours for the game. So 2:30 to
3 hours for the game.
Okay, 3 hours. Okay. So from 4 to 4:30, I would guess, but you really don't want to drag it out. I mean, how much can you do for 30 minutes?
It depends. Are they going to put together a highlight package? If they do, that could be cool.
That's true too. We'll have to actually check and see. I don't know if it's up now, but we could actually, once it does become available, go over to the CBS Sports Network website, and we can see how much time is going to be allocated for that.
Yeah, and we'll see how many, you know, post-game interviews they can get and all that.
Exactly.
You know, look at the Super Bowl post-game. I mean, essentially, I know it's not the same magnitude, but essentially it's the same thing. You're wrapping up the season. You want the interviews with the people. That goes on for a couple hours.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I'm not saying the AFL is warranting, you know, a couple hours, but I would say it's not hard to fill a half-hour time slot.
No, that's true. That's true. What do you guys think? I mean, about the All-Star game. Have you voted? What about, you know, possible Bushi to LA franchise? You know, go ahead and chime in. There are multiple ways that you can do so. There is Twitter, Facebook. There is Instagram. It's all /ArenaFan. And once we get towards the end of the show, we know you know them, but we'll give you our email addresses again also. Well, we're talking about the game itself. Again, Orlando and New Orleans. We've already heard from one side, and one of the competitors, from the New Orleans Voodoo in quarterback Chris Dixon. Now, to hear the opposite side and to hear his side of the story, Adam was able to speak with head coach Doug Plank. We'll get to it in a couple of seconds here, Adam, but very interesting interview without giving much away.
Yeah, always good to talk X's and O's with Coach Plank. Definitely one of the best minds in this league, and certainly the best coach to have never won a championship in this league as well.
Yeah. So we will go ahead and play that interview for you, and when we get back, we have the fan questions. We have Adam's come up with some interesting milestones. We got the games of the week and a little bit more. So enjoy.
And we're back here on AFL Tonight. We have a very special interview we've been searching all year for, and with just 1 week left in the season and a very important one at that, we're here to bring it to you. We've got Orlando Predator coach Doug Plank with us. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Adam, it's great to be with you.
Coach, obviously the season didn't start the way that anyone wanted out of the bats, out of the blocks at 0-5. How did you get the team motivated at that point to get going again from there to get to the position you're in now?
I think it's two words, Aaron Garcia. He came on board after we were starting with an 0-5 start, and it just, I really felt like we were where we needed to be at the beginning of the season. We had a very veteran team, but, you know, you can't put a team together and say they're going to play together when they've never done it before, and, you know, you start injecting new themes and new concepts, schemes, and things like that, and you know, we never really got our team chemistry going. Kyle Riley, eventually, our quarterback, starting quarterback, left and went to Jacksonville ultimately. And, you know, with Aaron Garcia came in, at least it gave us some stability at the quarterback position. And I think, you know, from that point forward, we started, I wouldn't say dominating, but we got much better, you know, both on offense and defense. This year's been really a trying experience for me because, especially from an injury standpoint, I don't think I've ever been on a team that's had this many injuries and this much change along all the different positions. And so we're just looking for some stability and continuity in all the factors, all the sections of our team.
Why the move after week five? Why not a move earlier in the season? Was Aaron Garcia a guy that you targeted right away at the start of the year before even Kyle Rowley was on board?
You know, you think about it. Once the season begins, if things aren't going well for you, it's not like you can just go to the shelf and just pull somebody out of the, you know, closet. Aaron Garcia wasn't available in those first 5 weeks. He was with San Jose. And for whatever reason, they made a decision. I don't think they were winning or had won as many games as they wanted. And they felt like Aaron was expendable, and they wanted to have a trade, and they wanted to go out and find another quarterback, which they did. So fortunately for us, we were in the shopping mode, and, you know, so it was really more about timing than anything else. We hadn't targeted Aaron before the season or anything like that, and never really felt like we even had a chance to get him. So, but, you know, now that he's here, he's proven himself, obviously, and has proven himself, which we're for whatever team he's been on. But more than anything else, he gave us great leadership.
You've ended up with 49 different players this year on your team, as you alluded to before, easily more than any other team has used in the AFL this season. Is it a testament to injuries? Is it a testament to finding the right guys? And do you think you have that right mix of 20 right now that you can trot out there on a weekly basis?
I don't think, with that many players, Adam, I don't think you ever know whether you're right or not. I mean, it's you're crossing your fingers every single week. I don't think we've had the same secondary 2 weeks in a row. And, you know, that's saying something because, you know, we've got played 17 games and, you know, we're in a situation that, you know, it's been very, very challenging for us. Continuity, not making mistakes, you know, especially at the quarterback position. You know, we've had, you know, like I said, a couple quarterbacks. You know, our kicker has some consistency, Mark Lewis. We start looking around our team, whether it's been offensive line, defensive line. So, and every coach has to deal with injuries and things like that. It's just that it hurts a little bit more when you have to deal with so many.
You mentioned the secondary, so let's go ahead and bring it up. Obviously, it's been a frustrating year from that standpoint, a very big contributing factor as to why the team has given up 80 points a few times, 60 points, nine times in the season, and over 58 points per game. You bring in Tanner Varner, though, over the course of just the last couple weeks, and he seems to have brought a real shot to the arm at the Jag linebacker position. Do you have the right mix now in the secondary to make it work?
Well, you know, there's a possibility we may not even go with the same lineup as we had last week, you know, in this week's game. So Tanner Varner, certainly, I'm familiar with Tanner because he was in Philadelphia last year, and, you know, he also plays field corner and can play Jack linebacker, but he is just such a focused, aggressive player that you really don't have to coach. He coaches himself. He coaches the players around him. So he was a really big addition. He's already intercepted 3 balls for touchdowns and really, really has given us a big spark. It's players like that that we really need to get on this football team and start swinging the momentum in our favor. I think so many times, you know, you feel good about the players around you, and I don't think our players right now have had enough experience or time to be able to say that on this team.
A couple players I'd like to highlight with you. We'll start on the defensive side of the ball with Dominic Jones, and I guess more specifically with what he brings to the kick return game. He's doing things that no one on this team has ever done before. With a good game this week, may have 2,000 kick return yards. What has he brought to your team this year?
He's an example of what's possible if you have determination and soul. And he's a guy that comes out every single day. You know, he could have probably been put on injury reserve with the rest of the players we have because he's had so many injuries, but his mental toughness allows him just to play through it. You know, every football player after the first 2 or 3 games is playing less than 100%, usually at 90, 80, 70% because with injuries and other things that have tendency to hold them back physically. But Dominic Jones, you know, for a man of not very tall, but I'll tell you what, he plays like a 7-footer out there on that field. He's very physical. He anticipates. He's tough. He's a good leader and coach on the field for our other players. So he's really been a very good example. And when I talk about consistency, he's maybe the only player we've had on defense that's played every game so far.
Yeah, in fact, the number of guys that you've had play every game this year is really only just a couple. And the other guy is Jason Gathers. He's one of the 3 receivers on the team who has exceeded over 1,000 yards. The 3 receivers I'm talking about, of course, are Gathers, Preche Rodriguez, and T.T. Tolliver. And both T.T. and Preche have over 1,500 yards this year. It's really been the one position that has stayed consistent week in and week out. How much has that helped the team in the growth of the offense?
Well, in terms of gaining yards and scoring points, there's no question that crew has may remain somewhat consistent. Those receivers, they're all pros, and they all come to work every day. They're all very talented, and you know, and it's hard to believe that, you know, we had Josh Bush also, you know, who had also piled up a tremendous amount of yards in his career. You know, he was injured earlier in the year, but no, our receiving corps has done a great job.
Will it be Jarvis Williams stepping into that role if Jason Gathers can't play?
Yeah, there's no question. Jarvis Williams is. Played with the team last year. You know, he was a player that was released in training camp, went to Jacksonville. I mean, now that I see what Jarvis Williams can do, both from one Jacksonville standpoint and also since he's been here, you know, he's somebody that I would plan on keeping on this team for as long as he wants to be here. He's a great special teams player. He goes and gets passes that really nobody else wants to get. And, you know, he's a physical force on that field. So, you know, he's been a real pleasure to have on the team.
Let's turn our attention to this week's game against the New Orleans Voodoo. Obviously, these teams, both of them, look nothing like they did way back in week 1 when the Predators were beaten in overtime. When I say New Orleans Voodoo in the game this week, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Chris Dixon, you know, our backup quarterback. was now starting for the Voodoo. And, you know, it's hard to watch their film. Obviously, I watch mostly offensive, being a defensive coach, and seeing Chris Dixon. I start understanding why we recruited him when he first came here. You know, he's a very excellent quarterback at throwing on the run, and, you know, just creating a goodwill for other players. I mean, he makes other players around him look better, and he enhances their performance. And, you know, and I know Pat O'Hare, their coach. I'm pretty familiar with their team. You know, I was a coach in the Southern Division for a number of years, and, you know, knew a lot of those players and people that coached down there. So, you know, it's going to be a great game. Both teams understand and realize that, you know, both of them need this win, a victory, to go on in the playoffs. So I think it, you know, probably has the most consequences out of any game this weekend.
Obviously, you know, you mentioned Chris Dixon was on the team before Coach O'Hara was the coach of the Predators for 2010 and 2011. There's some bad blood there, and we had an interview with Chris Dixon that will be airing alongside this one. And he sort of feels like that he never really had a shot in Orlando, that he was never really given a fair shake, and he's playing with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Do the guys in your locker room feel like they have a chip on their shoulder for this game as well?
You know what? If we had every player on our team that was released having a chip on his shoulder, we would have a woodshed throughout this whole community. We've got players on every team that have been on the Predators at one point in time in their life. I laugh at that. If you're going to be in a football business, you better get used to it. As a coach, as a player, as a front office person, if you think you've been done bad by being released from an organization or team, you better get used to it, because that's the way life is around here. And so I just kind of laugh. Chris Dixon saying not getting his opportunity. I mean, really, he was going to have his opportunity after Kyle Riley, you know, did not perform very well early. But, you know, he came in after the first quarter and played three quarters that night, ended up separating his shoulder before the game was over. So he really never did have a chance. You know, when his opportunity came, his shoulder was injured, and he had to stay on the sidelines. And then we ultimately, you know, had to go out and get a quarterback, in which we secured Aaron Garcia. So I understand Chris's frustration, and if that's what he needs to feel like he needs to get back at the Orlando Predators, then, you know, I say whatever players can use motivation to make themselves play better, then go ahead and use it.
Obviously, this is one of the biggest games that the Predators have played in quite some time. It will determine whether they get in the playoffs, whether they don't get in the playoffs. With this game being at home, is there an added pressure to you as a team?
I think anytime you're in front of your hometown fans, there's extra pressure. Your family is up there, your friends, your cousins, your fans, people that know you, your neighbors. You know, you want to play well in front of those people, and it means something. You're in your home field, you know the locker room extremely well. You've been in it, you know, prior weeks. So, I mean, that really doesn't mean anything, because some teams have a tendency to want to play well on the road. You know, I'm one of those guys that I like to play on the road. I think there's less distraction, more focus, and things like that. So there's a little bit of good and bad, you know, in both cases. But, you know, if I had to pick a game where I would want it at the Amway Center this Saturday night.
If the team wins this game, goes on to the playoffs, and maybe does not have some of the success of getting to the Arena Bowl, is the year considered a disappointment?
I think anytime you don't get to the Arena Bowl, it's a disappointment. I mean, I've been blessed to, you know, have the opportunity to go five times, you know, that's the goal. Anything less than that, not to get there, but to win it. I mean, so I think there's only one happy team at the end of the year. I'm not big into consolation. And, I mean, it doesn't matter how far you go to the playoffs. You know, if you ultimately lose and don't achieve what your goal is at the beginning of the season, you know, how could you not be disappointed? I think that's the life of an athlete. You know, always trying to get that ring, that championship. They can look back on years from now and say, wow, wasn't that a fantastic year? That's something I'll always remember. Versus, yeah, we almost got it done. We almost got there, and doggone it, you know, we lost it at the end of the game. I mean, I don't see how that song plays very well the rest of your life.
So, okay, well, one last question, two parts here. What are the Predators going to have to do to get in the playoffs by winning this game this week? And what are they going to have to do to be able to get all the way to the Arena Bowl?
I think this weekend we have to win the turnover battle. That means you're going to give up fewer turnovers than you get. That's going to be on both sides, you know, on both our offense and defense. For us to play well, we really need to play well in all three areas. You know, if everybody talks about offense or the team's defense, but, you know, not many people talk about special teams and what value you can have in your kicker and your returner. You know, Dominic Jones, an outstanding returner for us, you mentioned earlier. Mark Lewis is our kicker. You know, he's got an array of onside kicks. He does a great job kicking the ball off the bar. We need to be firing on all cylinders for us to get the Arena Bowl.
Coach, it's been a great 10 minutes or so with you. Our fans are sure to love this interview, and we look forward to speaking with you, hopefully after a Predator victory on Saturday.
Adam, always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This game is over. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah, when we said dueling interviews, holy crow. Wow.
I'm glad I brought up that question about the about our portion of the Dixon interview.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very. Oh, man.
For everyone who says this game isn't personal, and look, I've heard Coach O'Hara say it's not personal. I've heard Chris Dixon say it's not really personal. I've heard Coach Plank say it's not really personal. It sounds pretty damn personal to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Quite so. This should be, as I said, put records aside, this is probably going to be, it could be the crappiest game, but these two teams are going to go at it. And let's hope that more people show up for this game. You know, let's, you know, pack the arena.
I'm trying. I'm doing everything I can.
Pack the arena. Plus, I think we'll mention it as a separate thing, because I know we're going to talk about the games and whatnot. You're trying to set up a meet and greet.
Yes, with New Orleans fans.
Yeah.
I know there are at least, I know of exactly 8 of you at this point that are coming in from New Orleans, and I hope you all are listening tonight, and if you are, I'm inviting you over to Harry Buffalo's. It's right next to the, it's right across from the arena. It's a little more than a block away from the arena. Big, huge sign. You can't miss it. You walk right there, and I'm going to be there starting at 4:00. I already have a few RSVPs, and I know we're going to have at least one special guest from the Voodoo organization. So who will be stopping by probably sometime around 4:30 or so. So make sure you're there for that. Predator fans, you can come too. You know, we're not going to throw you out by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just kind of the impartial guy who's there. But you know, we'll get some group pictures. It'll be a good fun time.
Exactly. Wow. I'm just stunned by that interview. Yeah, I know. Since we're in week 19, we might as well go ahead and talk about them. We have our week 19 playoff scenarios, don't we?
Yeah, and there's not a lot going on, but there is enough going on. In the National Conference, everything is set at this point. We know that on Thursday, August 1st, the Rush, in spite of the fact that they've won their division, will not be hosting. They will be visiting the Spokane Shock. So they have a rough, rough time ahead of them. They have to play in San Jose on Saturday and then have to play in Spokane on Thursday.
Okay, well, also, let's talk about the Rush itself. And technically, according to the league, Chicago has not clinched the division, but I know you're going to mention it. There are some variables on the only way that it could happen.
The only way it could happen is if the combination of, obviously, Chicago would have to lose, San Antonio would have to win, and the combined margin of victory in those games would have to be greater than 163 points.
Right.
I wouldn't, you know, count on Rohan Davey running it up too much against Philadelphia.
Well, I'm talking about two blowouts, it'd be basically two 80-point blowouts, and I don't see that occurring either, so.
Especially since the biggest margin in AFL history is 62.
Exactly. So, continue. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure that we got that out because.
For all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
We don't want to be accused of any shenanigans.
That's right.
Like we were last week. But anyway, so we know the Rush are going to be playing at Spokane on Thursday. And for anyone that asks, the arena in Spokane is booked up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it was a matter of playing the game on Thursday
or Monday.
Or playing the game on Monday or even Tuesday. And it's just too late for that. So my guess is Chicago is just going to stay on the West Coast. That would be my guess.
That's my understanding. That's what I've understood, Adam. That's what's going to happen. Sort of similar.
Yeah, I don't know whether they're going to stay in San Jose or travel right away and stay in Spokane, but whatever it is,
yeah,
it really doesn't make any sense to play all the way back to Chicago.
No, exactly. It's going to be something similar to what Spokane, what Tampa did and what Spokane did when they were on the opposite ends of the country for themselves. So it's my understanding is something similar. So
right. And then on Sunday, August 4th, the San Jose SaberCats will be taking on their arch rivals, the Arizona Rattlers, at the Snake Pit on Sunday night at 8 o'clock. And interestingly enough, the winner of that game would be hosting Chicago if Chicago were to win against Spokane, and Spokane would be hosting San Jose, or Arizona will be hosting, like we said, either the winner of Chicago or Spokane.
Yep. So, you know, it's funny. It would be an interesting matchup if Chicago and Arizona met again, considering that these two teams have split their games when they played each other twice. So 2013, 2011, and 2010, they both split their games. And Chicago almost swept Arizona this year. It was just this close. Remember the game, the infamous game where no video, the game was streamed by the Arizona Rattlers president and COO over the internet because it wasn't available. So they came very close in that game. So the playoffs in the National Conference could be very interesting. But obviously it's not set for the American Conference, but that alone right now have quite a few scenarios, doesn't it?
Yeah, things are a little up in the air right now in the American Conference. The basics of what you need to know, Philadelphia will start at the top. Philadelphia right now is in control of the number one seed, either a Philly win or a Jacksonville loss, and the Soul will be the number one seed, and Jacksonville will be the number two seed.
Right.
Beyond that, it gets a little hairier. We know Tampa Bay is in. We don't know whether Tampa Bay is going to be the three seed or the four seed. If Tampa Bay beats Jacksonville this week, we know that those two teams will play each other once again in Jacksonville in the first round of the playoffs. It could still also happen if Tampa Bay wins, if Tampa Bay loses, New Orleans wins, and Philadelphia wins. That will still be the 2-4 matchup, or it could be, 2-3 matchup, or it could be the 1-4 matchup if Jacksonville wins, Philadelphia loses, and Orlando beats New Orleans. Got all that?
Yeah, I have it all written down.
Yeah, and then of course, the other basic that you need to know is the last playoff spot will obviously go to the winner of the game between the Predators and the Voodoo on Saturday night, which is what makes this obviously the biggest game of the weekend because it essentially is a playoff game and it's the only game that really means anything of any consequence to both teams. I don't think Tampa Bay really cares too much whether it's the three or the four. I don't think it really cares whether it's playing Jacksonville or Philadelphia in the first round. If New Orleans gets in, it will be as the four seed. If Orlando gets in, it will be as the three seed if Tampa Bay, in the likely event that Tampa Bay loses, it will be as the four seed if Tampa Bay wins.
Okay. Now, if you're just as confused, it is currently on the front page of arenafan.com. And once everything has been decided, you'll be able to go ahead and check our schedules page for everything that is up to date. One thing Adam did not mention is that the games they've already been decided. Both games for the American Conference are going to be held on Saturday, August 3rd. Basically it's 7 o'clock in Jacksonville, 7:05 in Philadelphia. And as of this week, we have found out that the CBS Sports Network Game of the Week will be held, will be broadcast from Philadelphia.
So in all likelihood, that will be set up to be I guess if you want to go by which teams are favored, it will be a Philadelphia-Tampa Bay game.
Right.
As the 1-4 game in the American Conference.
Exactly.
But it could also be Philadelphia-Orlando or Philadelphia-New Orleans.
It could be anything. I mean, it's speaking of games, I don't know how much you saw of it, Adam, because we're going to head over to the fan questions, and we have milestones that you came up with, very interesting milestones, actually. All last week Arizona was promoting their throwback game, the game versus Chicago. Did you happen to get a chance to catch any of the game over on Cox 7?
No, because I was at the I didn't get back to Tampa Bay till very late.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
On Saturday night. So, no, I didn't catch any of it. But my gut is those uniforms are never coming out again.
They looked fantastic, though.
They lost.
It's true. They lost. It's true. But, it's funny is that, this is the second team in 2 years that has held a throwback game. The Milwaukee Mustangs held one last year. They didn't do it complete. Arizona went all out. All out for this thing. We're talking the helmets, the logos, basically the entire black uniform as everybody remembers from the, I think it was the early 90s, since their inception, to when they made modifications to it, to I think it's 2000, just as they came back, I think it's like 2009, if I remember correctly. But they looked absolutely fantastic. I mean, for me, I like to see this type of stuff. Props to the Arizona Rattlers organization for making this happen. It looked fantastic. I wish more teams would do it, Adam. But I mean, wouldn't it be cool? Just for the sake of it, to bring back the old Gladiators for Tampa Bay, just for one game.
That's better than the Zubaz.
I was about to say better than Zubaz, exactly. So, coming to the end of the season, and Adam, I think you mentioned this one. We did have it was something that was done for the very first time in Arena Football League history. We actually had a player break the 2,000 yards receiving mark for the third time in 3 years, for the first time in AFL history.
Yeah, Tiger Jones has had himself a heck of a little career already. In just his fourth season in the league, I had this mentioned as soon as he got there on Saturday night, he became the first receiver to reach the 2,000-yard mark this year and became the first receiver in AFL history to do it for the third time in his career. So a tremendous milestone for sure for someone to get to in the AFL. And, again, I understand that you're talking about an 18-game season. This year he did it in 17 games. So this is a guy who's averaging right around 120 receiving yards a game, and I don't care how many games you're playing. That's an impressive mark and definitely not one to be taken lightly.
Besides that, what other marks are we possibly looking at, or are other milestones that that players are teams, players, whichever, are coming up?
Let's sit down and get your calculators out for this one, because we have a long list, and we'll be tweeting them as we go. On Friday and Saturday.
You know, what we could do, if you want, Adam, instead of giving everything away, let's go ahead and pick and choose ones that you think are the most worthy, and we'll let the fans.
They're all worthy. They're okay. All records. Sure. I looked them all up, so we're gonna go over them.
Okay. Don't wanna waste all that time. I agree.
Yeah. If we go on for the next 20 minutes, no, it won't take 20 minutes, just a few. Eric Meyer leads the league in touchdown passes right now with 106. Nick Davila is right behind him with 104.
Stop right there. And I was also gonna say thank you for bringing that up. Only two quarterbacks this year that have thrown for 100 touchdowns, and they should be the only two that are going to throw for over 100.
Garcia got to 100 last week, too.
Oh, did he get over 100?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Damon Adebaugh could get there if he throws 9. I doubt he's going to be in to throw 9 touchdowns this week.
Okay. Now, question to that actual milestone. Compared to last year, I think we had 6 or 7 quarterbacks. What do you think was the reason that we have so few quarterbacks?
The fact of the matter is we've only had 4 quarterbacks start 17 or more games this year.
Okay.
So, I mean, J.J. Raderick is going to have started 16. Maybe he starts this week and plays 17. But he's the only other guy. And believe it or not, nobody else has started more than 14 games this year. So, you know, you got to start the games and play the games start to finish in order to get all those touchdown passes. And there's only been a few quarterbacks who've been able to do it.
Right.
But, yeah, Radebaugh, Davila, and Meyer are going to be the only guys to start all 18 games this year. Garcia will start 17. Raderink will start either 16 or 17, and nobody else is even close.
Wow. Yeah.
Some via injury, like Aiden Nack, some via just
that's true. Yeah.
Inefficiency, and that's unfortunately most of the rest of it.
Oh, I see why I missed Garcia, because if he...
2 teams, yep.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I missed that. I missed that mark, so...
So... But anyway, there have only been 8 quarterbacks in league history to throw for at least 110 touchdowns, and if Nick Davila can get to 6 in this one, he would become the only quarterback to reach 110 touchdowns 3 times in a career. And considering the fact that it had never been done just a few years ago, this is a remarkable accomplishment if he could get there. And even if he doesn't, it's still, you know, kudos on a fantastic season. And truth of the matter is, if he were to stay in a bunch of these games that turned into blowouts that Arizona had, he probably would have thrown for 130 touchdowns or 120 touchdowns at least this year.
Yeah.
Aaron Garcia, speaking of AG, needs 206 yards to reach 5,000 for the season. 9 times it has happened that a quarterback has had at least 5,000 yards in a season. And this would be a first for AG. He had 4,985 yards last year, and that was a career high. And another little interesting tidbit about Aaron Garcia is he is the first quarterback in AFL history to throw for 4,500 yards in a season while playing on 2 different teams.
Wow.
So, an interesting one there. We'll go back to the Philadelphia Soul here and Tiger Jones. We just mentioned his mark of 2,000 yards for the third time in a career. Reggie Gray needs 118 yards to get to the 2,000 mark as well. There have only been 7 seasons of at least 2,000 yards receiving in AFL history, and obviously Tiger Jones has 3 of those 7. Gray also needs 5 touchdowns to get to 50 this year. It's kind of lofty, probably won't get there, but if he were to, he would be the 7th man in AFL history to have a season of at least 50 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go on the ground now. Derek Ross last week became the 3rd man, or put to post the 3rd season of at least 500 rushing yards in AFL history, joining Derek Ross and Derek Ross. He is smashing every rushing record.
And it's very possible, by the way, I think if A.D. Mack had not gotten hurt, he for sure. I mean, he was already at, yeah, I mean, for the season, he ended up with 90 rushes, 410 yards. For sure. For sure, A.D. Mack, I think, would have gone ahead and broken the 500-yard mark also.
Yeah, a lofty mark here for Ross, but if he were to rush for 6 touchdowns, he would tie Dan Alexander's all-time record of 41 rushing touchdowns in a season. And Ross, of course, this year, as we had mentioned before, now has 30-plus touchdowns on the ground once again this season, mm-hmm. and it's just a remarkable feat.
And a question, by the way, speaking of rushing, and I don't know this, I may be surprising you with this question, would Chris Dixon, because I know we're talking about a few weeks ago where Chris Dixon may lead 2 teams in rushing, we know that's not going to be the case now. No, I know. But if he gets 2 more yards rushing, technically wouldn't he be the first person to be with 2 teams to rush for 200 yards?
I have no idea.
I'm guessing. I wouldn't – usually when you have more – you know, a ton of yardage, that you usually stay with the same team.
Almost certainly.
Okay.
But, kicking record.
Yeah.
Lindholm in Arizona broke the record for converted point afters this year with 146, and he is going to demolish that record. So kudos to him, and hat tip to Richard Obert of the Arizona Republic, because he published that. That record was getting close, I believe, 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And obviously now Lindholm has broken that. We'll go to the return game. Terrence Sanders had a remarkable year for the Shock. He needs 42 yards to break the all-time single-season record for most return yards in a game. He's chasing Ron Carpenter, who had 2,240 yards for the 2003 Detroit – I almost called him the Detroit Drive, the Detroit Fury. Sanders is also 1 kick return for a touchdown short of tying the AFL record of 7 kick returns for a score in a season. Speaking of the Shock, we'll go to team records now. Again, pretty lofty, probably not going to get there, but if they were to get to 92 points, they would break the all-time record for the most points scored in a season in AFL history and also the average points per game in league history. They also need 10 touchdowns to tie the record for the most total touchdowns scored in a season in league history. And, of course, all those records are owned by last year's Philadelphia Soul, who averaged over 68 points per game and scored over a whopping 1,200 points.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the Soul have a bit of an interesting, dubious mark this year. They're only averaging 12.7 yards per kick return. The record for the worst average kick return yards for a team is 12.8 yards. So if this stays for Philadelphia, they will break that record held by the 1992 Charlotte Rage. Another dubious mark, the San Antonio Talons, thanks to Rohan Davey turning the ball over 8 times last week.
Jeez, yeah, I know.
They are just 2 turnovers short of breaking the record for the most turnovers ever in a season in league history. The record is currently 54, held by the Iowa Barnstormers, so we expect that San Antonio will break that record this week. And finally, last week, Jacksonville Sharks broke the record for the most sacks in a single season. They got 5 last week, giving them 44 for the year. And now they're taking on a Tampa Bay offensive line that looks like it's got 3 doormen.
Yeah.
So the Sharks will continue to add to that record, which they set last week. The Tampa Bay offensive line was just an atrocity against Pittsburgh last week, a team that was one of the worst teams and getting sacks. So if you want to read all about that, I mused about it in my post-game story from the Tampa Bay game last week. So that's all the records we'll be chasing this week, the single-season records. And like I said, I will do the best I can from Orlando while covering a game, because apparently Tim is not going to be around on Saturday.
No.
So I will be doing the best I can to cover everything I can. Follow me on Twitter at AFLGuru. And, of course, I'll be putting everything on our Facebook page at ArenaFan as well.
Exactly. And when Adam does post it on the Facebook page, it actually does show up at our Twitter account also, at ArenaFan. So stay tuned. By the way, nice job, Adam. We want to get these stats out to the fans. We make sure we get out these stats to the fans. I'm about to say, guys, you probably haven't seen anything yet. If you didn't follow our coverage last year for Arena Bowl, wait till you see what we do at Arena Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Now we're a lot more organized this year.
Oh, man. So
yeah, we didn't know what we were doing last year. Now we know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people will look at the way that some of these coaches are. We saw how Coach Plank was reacting to the questions that he was asked tonight. You think that some coaches really aren't that into it, or you really don't see them, and we've seen coaches react on the field from coaches in Las Vegas getting tossed after tearing off their shirt and getting thrown out of the game. We've seen just this past week it was a date in AFL history where a coach and an owner got into a fight. I think it was, who was it? It was, I think the New England Steamrollers, I think that's what it was, if I'm not mistaken. I have to go back and check. You've seen, coaches go after owners. You've seen coaches go after commissioners. It's happened in the Arena Football League. So, they are very, very passionate. Now, we know how much the Arizona Rattlers, how well they've done this past year. Come across, and they had a hell of a blip this past weekend with the Chicago Rush. And a game that I think both Adam and I never thought Chicago would have a chance at winning this game. They did. And they took Arizona to task. They completely outplayed them. What did Coach Guy do? Didn't mince words in any way, shape, or form. What did he say? Listen to this.
As a coach, I've sat back and questioned mental toughness on us at times this year, okay? And, we came out and played like we were a bunch of front runners tonight. At the end of the day, we were just soft. I mean, we were soft offensively. We got a spark right out the gate. Our Keith Brown ran a kick back. You know, we come out defensively. I couldn't tell you how many times they gave us an opportunity to take a one or two touchdown lead at halftime, and offensively we just didn't get it done. And, again, it starts with me. But, we've got to play better, as a unit. And we can't come across as a bunch of prima donnas and think we're just going to show up and win. These are professional athletes. Everybody we play gets paid to play too. And you can't start believing your own press clippings. And that's what we're dealing with right now. And, I think some guys need to look in the mirror. And, I want to see our pride. I didn't see passion. I didn't see passion on the offensive side tonight. And at the end of the day, we got to look in the mirror and we got to address it.
Yeah, I think he was mad, Adam.
Yeah, it's rough when you're going to be the one seed in the conference and you get called a prima donna by your coach. Mm-hmm. Obviously Coach Guy wanted to do something to rally up his team just a bit, and I would say that's a good way of doing it. You don't call a whole bunch of, 350-pound men prima donnas.
No.
So maybe this was what Arizona needed. And maybe it is that maybe they are beatable. Maybe they're not as good as I made them.
Well,
to
I'm saying,
when I wrote that article.
I know, but remember, as I said before, look what Chicago has really been, other than the blowouts, that they've had within the Western Conference, the Western Division, between each of their, Spokane and San Jose, et cetera. Look what Chicago has done.
They're kicking ass and taking names on the road.
I know.
I'm sorry. They have beaten everybody on the road. They have beaten some teams up. They beat Tampa. They beat Orlando. Mm-hmm. They beat Arizona. They are just beating teams up on the road.
So it makes me wonder if, you know, if there are some holes in what, you know, if Chicago is able to exploit these holes and for DeVita to have probably one of his worst games of the entire season.
And probably his entire career.
Yeah. Then it's something that these other teams would be easily to exploit. Because remember, game tape is available to all these teams. It's mandated by the league. So it's going to be very, very interesting. You know, especially if, you know, say for instance, if Chicago ends up playing Arizona again or however it may be. I mean, it could be very, very interesting to say the least. But, you know.
Yeah, nobody is counting the rush out at this point. So,
no,
you know,
not at all.
Kudos to them. And in my opinion, and I know we've got a piece being worked on in the back ends of the Arena Fam world, stating this, but as a website, we collectively believe that Coach McMillan should be Coach of the Year. And we know he's not going to win it in all likelihood. We know Kevin Guy will win it, and hats off to him for it. His team has had a remarkable season again.
Mm-hmm.
But the crapola that Bob McMillan has had to go through between, you know, the drama with Rockford and all the crap with multiple owners and the league isn't letting them make transactions.
Yep.
And it's just the fact that he is getting through this all and he is leading this team through all of this crap and now has pulled off the tremendous scalp of going into Arizona and beating the Rattlers.
And basically clinching a playoff spot at the same time.
Absolutely. You win a division like that and earn a quote-unquote home playoff game in Spokane, you know, having to play 10 road games and you know, losing, not getting Russ Micna back and losing Gino Gadulli before the season even start. It's remarkable what he has been able to put together with this team. And I don't know if there's another coach in the league that could have gotten through this like Bob McMillan has gotten through it with the Chicago Rush this year.
And you know what? I think, guys, one of the best things that you could do, if Coach McMillan does not get to it, he is a part of the AFL Global All-Star ballot. Vote for him. What better way to say thanks for what you've done this year, Coach, than to vote him as the head coach for the?
It was my vote.
Yeah, for it was mine too for the conference. So head over to the AFL Global website and do it. Fan questions. We have a couple that coming to you guys again this week. We thank you for posting them over on Twitter and on our Facebook page. Let me go ahead and refresh these real quick.
And as I said, we do. Please stop asking us questions that we cannot answer.
Yeah.
You know what they are when we can't answer them.
Yep. And any of the questions that we do have, we try to answer them, obviously, as best as possible. So, the first question came to us via Twitter. And it came to us, he was only known by EO. It's EZ2004. How do you think the Soul will do in their final regular season game, and how far will they go in the playoffs?
They're probably going to end up in the Arena Bowl. I would say that they're odds-on favorites at this point. I think the only team that could trip them up, in my opinion, would be Orlando. I don't think Jacksonville stands a chance, especially if the game is in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Tampa Bay doesn't have a chance. That would be a joke right now, unless all of a sudden the Storm are going to find an offensive line and a quarterback. In terms of this week's game, San Antonio's a wreck. They're done. They've packed it in. There's no doubt in my mind Philly will be winning this game and winning this game by really as many points as they want to win it by.
Yeah. I'm looking at it, you know, I would not be surprised too if Philadelphia ends up being there. I think it's just a matter of the road that they have. I mean, they have one of the easier, to me, they have one of the easier playoff roads to get there. I mean, they might move a blip if they end up playing Jacksonville. Yeah, all it needs, and we've seen this before, just go back and look at, I'm referencing it again, Adam, but the Chicago Rush team that came into the playoffs, that was under 500, it's the third time I think this year I've done it.
Dagger.
You win three, you're a champ. It doesn't matter. Look at the Calgary Stampeders that did it. They were 8-10 going into the playoffs and won the Grey Cup. So it's possible.
All right, at least you're taking a shot at your own team.
I'm taking a shot at my own team. Hey.
All right, that's at least fair.
There you go. Okay. question to us came from Jeremy, and I'll just mention something that he talked about here. The odds of LA having a team ready for next season. First they got to get the team. That's first and foremost. They got to get the team. And remember, the information that we heard before is that it is currently in the works, but we'll find out at Arena Bowl. But
yeah, this is not a done deal yet. And even if it is announced that the expansion right, because the way it's probably going to be worded is that the expansion rights have been awarded to LA.
Yes.
That doesn't mean LA is going to field the team. Technically, and the AFL hasn't made any real light of this, there is an owner for Brooklyn to have a team. The rights are there. The rights are there for an owner to start a team if he wants to in that city. So the rights for the city have been handed out, but obviously Brooklyn hasn't played a game yet.
Right.
So just because that announcement is made does not necessarily mean that there will be an LA Avengers or whatever that they would choose be chosen to be called. I would say, you know, from what I've been hearing, I've heard anywhere from, and I'll quote, not a rat's ass chance in hell, to 80-20 that it happened. So obviously there's a big swing there from there's no chance in hell to an 80-20 proposition that it does happen. I would say right now it's probably better than 50-50.
And we've seen it before where teams have been awarded and they never came to fruition. I mean, New Orleans was awarded a franchise, I think it was like 2 years before they actually came into the league because the NFL owners were given the rights to be able to own teams. Dan Snyder, as an example, there's another good example, is that
example.
Yeah, he was awarded a franchise, the infamous Washington D.C. Warriors, and they never played a down. Right now, sure, you can be awarded something. Does it mean you're going to be playing the same year, the next year? No, it does not. Jeremy actually asked another question. He goes, what do you think about the odds of the AFL returning for the next season in general? He goes, with attendance down across the board, it's making this fan slightly nervous. Firstly, you mentioned attendance. Last week was the third time, I think it's the third time this year that we've had over 9,000. That has not happened in, I think.
Yeah, but getting 16 in one event, you know.
True. No.
Looking at the mean and looking at the median are two very different things.
No, that I completely agree with. But if you look at the attendance is, it is up. The overall average is up. If everything goes according to plan, the league will end up above 8,000 for the year. This will not be, one of the lowest in league history when it comes to overall attendance, but it will not be anything, I think, like last year. Last year was the second worst in league history. Now, you look at these particular attendance numbers, they can be a huge, huge positive. It just shows in some of these other markets, some of the well-established markets, that they're gaining a lot of ground. Pittsburgh also, you know, they did very well in their last game. They drew well. Same thing with Arizona. Arizona broke 10,000 for the first time in a few years, if I'm not mistaken. Now, as far as the AFL is concerned, you know, we have not heard anything other than, you know, the league is, you know, that they're not going to return. I can understand how seeing all the stuff that has been occurring with all these teams can be can be a hell of a downer for fans. Unfortunately, it's not anything that we can control. When it comes to the AFL, if it is feasible and it is not, you know, if it is, if it's able to be done properly, if they're able to field teams, et cetera, we're going to have a league next year. If anything happens during the off season that changes that, you know, right now we really can't look into a crystal ball. It's all really speculation. And I'm sure, Adam, that you may agree with some of that, but I think some of those things you may not too.
Yeah, I mean, if you want me to put odds on it, I would, you know, you would love to say there's 100% chance that the league's coming back next year, but that's obviously not the case. I'll remind people that at the 2008 Arena Bowl, nobody was saying anything about the league not coming back. Everything was, oh my God, David Baker's stepping down. What are we going to do now? We've got to find some sort of commissioner. And it was 4 months later or so that the grumblings started coming out that maybe there won't be a season. And then all of a sudden it picked up steam, and within a few weeks it was just done. There are definitely signs that say the end could be near for the league, and I'm not going to make any bones about it.
Right.
Will they play? I think so. Would I be betting my money on it? No, I would not. I would, if I had to stick an arbitrary number on it, just for the sake of sticking an arbitrary number on it, I would say 75-25, maybe 80-20,
okay,
that the league does play next year.
Yep.
But I would say there is definitely a very substantial chance that there is not an Arena Football League in 2014. It doesn't mean it's over with, but I just don't – I'm not 100% confident that there are going to be enough teams to warrant playing a full season next year.
Yeah. Nicholas Sarabia asks us a question. Is, could the All-Star game in Hawaii lead to a potential team in the island state? Do you see this as a one-time game or an annual All-Star game? It's funny, I mentioned that before. To his first point, no. I don't think there will ever be a team ever again in the state of Hawaii, and just because of the logistics of the cost. Supposedly it was absolutely astronomical just for travel alone. Remember, there is no bridge, so you can't drive to Hawaii. So, you know, I don't think it, and as far as a one-time thing, if it is controlled by AFL Global, maybe we might see it. Even if they do control, you know, even if they do start up the China League. It's possible. Maybe in the near future, it will be AFL versus the China League players. It is possible. But right now, I would just see it as a one-year thing.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it going back to Hawaii, but certainly not as a regular, you know, as a regular team. That's not going to happen.
Right.
If that were to happen, it would be the dumbest freaking thing on the face of the earth. It would be dumber than having the Tampa Bay and Orlando fly out to Spokane every freaking year.
Yeah, no, I know. You know, if they were able to get some more teams out in the Northwest, it might, you know, do well. You get your team in Portland, get a team in Seattle. It might make it a little bit easier. It would actually, Adam, it may actually lead to, could it be a balanced schedule?
Never.
Never.
Never. And in fairness, you know, we pick on this version of the AFL for not having a balanced schedule. The schedule has never been balanced in the history of the AFL, and it's never made any sense to me.
No, I know. But we will see. Remember, two separate entities. AFL Global can decide to do what they want to do. You know, it could be a Pacific Rim type of thing with Hawaii and, I don't, you know, but we'll have to see coming down the line, so. Let's see, Anthony Nieves, we went ahead and talked about expansion teams. We already talked about that. Nick Price asked the question, why the Central Division champ is the number two seed, you know, and why is Chicago not hosting? Well, why is the number two seed Chicago not hosting?
Now, the official answer is because the arena is not available. The unofficial answer is because the league doesn't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
Period. I mean, I'll call it what it is. If somebody wants to call me on it and get angry at me for saying that, fine. But that's the truth.
Yeah.
The league doesn't want to pay for it. The league doesn't want to foot the bill, so they'd rather let Spokane have the game.
Well, I'm sure if the other teams are footing the bill for Chicago, I can understand why they don't want them to travel. Or happen to, you know, whether it be in Rockford or not, because supposedly Rockford does have something available over at the BMO Bank Harris Center.
They just don't want to pay for the rent.
Exactly.
It's cheaper to just have the guys playing on the road.
Exactly. It is. And pay a per diem, don't worry about renting the arena, et cetera, et cetera. So, here's a very good question from Riley Pierre Wheaton. Will Spokane rest their starters against the Power, or will they put them in and switch them out at halftime?
Who knows?
Yeah, it depends.
Let's ask Coach Olson, and he wouldn't tell us. I would say, based on the indication that Arvell Nelson played quarterback for, I think it was the last four drives of the game against San Antonio, I would say that every effort will be made to not let Eric Meyer go all that long. Maybe he gets a drive, maybe he gets a quarter, maybe he gets a half, maybe he doesn't play. You know, we won't know those things until Friday night, unfortunately, but I would say for sure you're not going to see Eric Meyer for the full game, because there really isn't so much an intensity about winning this one. Though, you know, it would be interesting if Spokane were to win and Arizona were to lose.
Exactly.
But we'll leave that up for another damning Adam Markowitz article.
Right.
When the time comes.
Beth Connolly asked us, are the playoff brackets set? Well, if you listened earlier before, Beth, you heard that they are not completely set, but obviously you can follow what we have it on the front page of arenafan.com, and we'll as the games can go on this weekend, it'll be get a lot more clear.
You'll know here first.
Exactly. And from Joe George, Voodoo or Predators, something we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes. So, let me see. One thing that I wanted to mention. So fan questions. Thank you, guys. We'll ask you again next week for some questions before the beginning of the show. And if it wasn't for these questions, well, you know, we wouldn't. And if you weren't listening, we wouldn't have a show. So thanks for all the questions that you keep on sending us to us each week. Week 19. And obviously, there's going to be a lot to talk about when we get to the New Orleans matchup. But there are other games on the schedule, and you know, it's a matter of, as I said at the beginning of the show, Adam, depends on which of these that we're considering really good games or really just they're just there to play. There is a game on Friday. Pittsburgh travels all the way to Spokane, and they are playing the Shock.
Gee, what a great way to end the season for the 4-13 Pittsburgh Power. Mm-hmm. We have to fly all the way across the country and play in Spokane. Who cares who wins this game? Who cares? Really, who cares?
Would you
just go with Spokane. Who cares?
By the way, and as I said, we know this really doesn't matter, but would you believe the all-time series is led by Pittsburgh? Pittsburgh beat Spokane back in May.
Yes, I remember the freaking game. Thank you.
Yeah.
I definitely remember the game.
2011. So
Kyle Rowley blew it out his you-know-what in that game.
So, yeah, I will admit, Shock. Unless something really collapses, I don't see the Shock losing, you know, I don't see the Shock losing this game.
If they want to win this game, they'll win this game. If they don't, anything could happen.
Yep. Now, second game obviously is 7 o'clock, New Orleans plays Orlando. We're under the impression that it not only is the game, I think you mentioned, that we talked about before this, game is going to be on AFL Live because it's not technically officially on TV, but is it going to be on Click Orlando?
I don't know. I heard a couple weeks ago that if the game meant something, it would be, but there has been no announcement to that effect as of yet. Okay. So I don't know. We'll find out on Saturday.
All right, you heard.
I'll find out the same time you all do.
Exactly, exactly. So you heard what Dixon said earlier in the interview. You heard what Coach Plank said. A couple weeks ago, we also happened to hear, you know, what Coach O'Hara happened to think. Well, recently, and I swear this could easily fuel the fire even more, former representative, former owner, former whatever you want to call him, Brett Bushy, happened to be on a local Orlando radio station. And he really let it be known what he feels when it came to the two matchups. And, just listen. This is what he said.
I'm so excited, and what will make it even better is that we will eliminate, if we win this week and New Orleans loses, we eliminate Pat O'Hara.
Oh.
Right, in New Orleans.
So that'll make you happy.
That will make me happy.
It seems like everybody seems to be chiming in, aren't they, Adam?
Yeah, we keep saying it, and I'm going to put together a little compilation piece for the day of the game. This is nasty. This is why I said that this could be the biggest sporting event ever at the Amway Center. And, you know, I have a lot of arguments from people who argue with me about the NBA All-Star game. Great. Let me know if you know who actually won the game and if you really cared who won the game.
Exactly.
There was no level of competition there. Somebody actually came up, I don't remember who it was off the top of my head, so I apologize for not giving you credit, brought up the first Solar Bears game. That was actually a darn good argument because that game had everything. It was a game against natural rival in the Florida Everblades, and it was the first game in team history, and they sold out the place, and it went to a 14-round shootout. So, yeah, that game actually had a lot of everything, but in my eyes, there hasn't been a Magic game that's been a damn thing since in 3 years this place has been open. People argued about the game Dwight Howard came back. The Magic sucked and got blown away in that game, if I remember right. They mentioned the playoff games against Indiana. There was never really a doubt Indiana was going to win that series, and there was certainly no doubt that the Magic were going to get past Miami, who went on to win the NBA championship that year in the next round. So, was that the year they lost in the NBA? It may have been the year Miami lost in the NBA finals. But regardless of what it is, the Magic weren't winning that. This really has everything. It's essentially a playoff game, even though in name it isn't. It is the would be the first playoff type game that the Predators have ever played in this building. They've only played playoff games on the road since the Amway Center opened. You have the former quarterback coming back with a massive chip on his shoulder. You have a coach that was fired by the team after an 11-win season. Coming back, and though Coach O'Hara is a stand-up guy and will never say that it's personal, it is personal. There is no better way that he would love to finish this season than by destroying Orlando. You have a Predator team that was 0-5. You have a New Orleans team that was 1-8. And they're both playing for the right to get in the playoffs in a conference that is wide open. The Predators, you know, the guarantee. I'm estimating that there's a $400,000 economic impact here for the Predators. If they get in the playoffs, they don't have to pay out on the guarantee, especially if they go far in the playoffs. They could justify not paying out on it. But if they lose this game, the team is going to finish 6-10, and you're talking, I'm sorry, 6-12, and you're talking about a 40% rebate for next year's season ticket holders. It's going to be an incredibly costly venture for the Predator ownership for that to happen. So that's a big part of this, not to mention the fact that if Orlando's in the playoffs, the Arena Bowl becomes more interesting.
All
those tickets that are sold to Orlando fans. And by the way, there's another thing about this too. The Arena Bowl tickets, they're not guaranteed to be Arena Bowl tickets. They're guaranteed tickets for the first playoff game that the Predators have. By the way, if the Predators win and the Storm lose and both happen to win next week, that first playoff game is going to be Orlando against Tampa Bay. Imagine what that could bring to the economy. And I didn't even mention that in the article.
That's true.
That many more tickets that have to sell for the Arena Bowl, if Orlando's in it, could be a $1 million swing here. And when you're talking about the Arena Football League and you're talking about a team that, look, let's face it, it's going to lose money this year. You know, $1 million of swing between what would not be lost and what would be gained for the team and the city. This is a huge, huge deal.
Yes.
With everything you ever could want in any sporting event. And I just, anyone who, I mean, obviously if you're listening and you're in Orlando, you're going to the game, but get your friends together, get your family together, get everybody there for this game. If you love this team and you love this game, this is when the team needs you most. Needs you most on the field to get in the playoffs, and they need you most because the league's not in great shape right now. If the Predators aren't selling out this game, what game are they selling out?
I would think that this would be the game to sell out. And by the way, what I think is very interesting about these two teams also, Adam, would you believe that New Orleans has won the last three games versus this Orlando Predators team?
And last year, if I remember right, was the first time they ever won in Orlando.
Double checking. Because they've only played 13 games.
Yeah, I think
that's... You are correct, sir. You are correct. It used to be back and forth, you know, home would win. It's been basically a series of streaks. New Orleans won the last three. Before that, Orlando won the last three. Mind you, that was dating all the way back. You know, the last game was back in 2008.
And, of course, that game in 2008, we knew at that point, was basically the same situation. Not quite the same situation, but it was the last game of the year for Orlando. Orlando had to win to keep its playoff hopes alive. Mm-hmm. It won the game. It did the job. By the way, there were all sorts of players, Javaris, Dudley, and all them, that were coming back to Orlando for that game. And that set up Orlando to not miss the playoffs. That would have been the first time since 91 the team hadn't made it. And it kept together what was the longest streak of making the playoffs in American sports.
And, you know, looking at these two teams, you know, Coach Plank is actually, he's 8-1 over all time versus the Voodoo. He's 2-1 versus O'Hara. So, obviously, Coach O'Hara is 1-2.
And that one loss was obviously in both cases back in week one.
And you look at these two teams, two different quarterbacks from the beginning of the year.
Different rosters.
Exactly. This game, you know, our fans actually have Orlando pegged at an 8-point spread.
That's a lot.
Out of the entire year, I am not really sure, you know, because I'm playing pick'em. I'm really not sure who I want to choose to, who I think is going to win this game. I really don't. I mean, there are so many positives on both sides to be able to choose, you know, to choose.
And so many negatives, obviously.
True. I mean,
you can't have two teams combined for 23 losses without there being a whole bunch of negatives.
That's true. That is true. That's a lot of negatives. But yeah, I'm just looking at it. I mean, could I see this game coming down to, you know, to a Chris Dixon last-minute rushing touchdown? Sure. Could I see it coming down to a Aaron Garcia touchdown at the last moment? Sure. But it's just a matter of how am I going to pick this game right now, with all honesty, as we're taping this, I am still at a pick'em, Adam. I really do not know who I think is going to win this game.
Yeah, and I'll take a little bit of time here to break this game down a little bit, and I'll get more into it when I publish my article on this later in the week. But this is going to be an interesting game. Neither of these offensive lines are really all that great. Neither of these defensive lines are really all that great. New Orleans definitely has the upper hand in the secondary, even though the Predators have taken a major step in the right direction with Tanner Varner. We learned today the Predators are going to be without Jermaine Smith, who suffered a season-ending injury. Jason Gathers, the team's third-leading receiver and the only receiver, and one of just two guys on the team who have played in all 17 games this year, he will not be with the team this week, and he will be out for the season. Also, Devin Clark, one of the best offensive linemen on the team, he's out for the season now and won't be back. So injuries are definitely going to have a big part of this. You know, Aaron Garcia obviously has really transformed this team, even though his statistics aren't particularly phenomenal, especially when you look at the fact that he's broken the league record, single-season record for the most interceptions in a season.
Yeah.
And he may break the record for most turnovers in a season by the time it's said and done, too. But, I mean, obviously you'd rather have Aaron Garcia than Chris Dixon, but, you know, look, Chris Dixon said he didn't feel like he got his shot. This is his chance. By the way, another side note that just kind of came to my mind, this could be the last game Aaron Garcia ever plays.
It's true, too.
Predators lose this game, that may be it for AG. I mean, essentially, he was, you know, he was technically traded from San Jose, but for all intents and purposes, he was just kind of cast away from the Sabercats. So, how much more does he have left in the tank? We say it every year, this could be the end. But I'm still going to go with Orlando in this game. I think there is enough there. The Predators, for the most part, down the stretch, up until last week, beat all the teams that they were supposed to beat. New Orleans has played much better football since the proverbial burial that I talked about earlier this week, where the Voodoo literally buried their first half of the season with a funeral. I love what Coach O'Hara has done. I love what he has put together. It would not surprise me if he wins this game, and there's going to be a part of me that's rooting for him to win this game. I'm a Predator at heart, but you know what? P.O. is so easy to root for.
Yes.
He really is. And like I said, it will be a good story for me one way or the other to be able to write, and I'll be in the winning locker room after the game. I'll probably stop by the losing locker room after the game as well. But I'm going to go with Orlando to win this game, though that's not necessarily it is what's best for the league. It's best for Orlando to be in the playoffs, and it's no slight on New Orleans whatsoever. But look, the bottom line, Voodoo fans, if you're in the Arena Bowl, there won't be 10,000 people in the stands. If Orlando's in the Arena Bowl, there'll be 17,000 in there.
Yeah.
So I think the league needs Orlando to win. I think the city of Orlando needs Orlando to win. I just think even with all that pressure, that somehow, some way, Aaron Garcia is going to come up with the plays when he has to do it, really with just all the veterans around him to get a little bit of revenge on the Voodoo. And though Brett Bushy will not be there, well, I mean, maybe he'll be at the game, I don't know, but, you know, will not be a part of the Predator organization officially for this, that, yeah, look, it's going to be sweet for the team. And look, there's going to be some animosity. You think Chris Dixon wants some revenge, don't think that there is not a bunch of angry Orlando defensive linemen that are ready to go welcome him back to the jungle.
Uh-huh.
If you want proof of that, look at the roughing the passer penalties that occurred against Kyle Rowland
exactly.
when he came into the game against Jacksonville. And we may see something very similar at the beginning of this game. I will be keeping track of all of those quarterback hits and all of those quarterback hurries and things like that. And all those little cheap shots, they add up. And I don't know if Chris Dixon is quite ready at this point in his first year in the AFL.
What I'm curious to know, and we'll talk to you about it next week, but I want to hear from you after the game. I'm curious to know, once this game is all said and done with, Adam, where it's going to rank in your history of Orlando Predator games. And that's something that we could talk about next week.
Depends on how it's going to end up going.
Exactly. You're talking about Jacksonville before, another huge game. Tampa Bay travels to Jacksonville.
If I'm the Sharks, and I posted this on our message board, and I know this is kind of fodder, but if I'm the Sharks, I'm throwing this game. I would really like to know that I'm going to play Tampa Bay in the first round of the playoffs, because of all eight teams that are going to be in, I would so much rather play Tampa Bay than even New Orleans at this point.
Yeah.
I would so much rather play Tampa Bay. The Storm are on their longest single season losing streak in franchise history.
Yep.
If they lose this game, as they are going to be expected to do so, it will be the longest losing streak that a team has ever been on going into the playoffs. Thanks, Dave Carlson, for pointing that one out to us. The Storm are just a wreck. Their offensive line is in shambles. Yeah. It's been in shambles all year. You know, Randy Hippier's trying his best, but he's just not that good. He's not AD Mack. The secondary has gotten burned over and over and over again. Did not play a very good game against Shane Austin and the Pittsburgh Power last week. In a game that looked, quite frankly, had Orlando won last week, had Orlando done what it was supposed to do, had New Orleans finished off that game, damn, Tampa Bay would still be fighting for its life.
Mm-hmm.
The Storm just don't look good right now. And the Sharks, you know, even though I make the suggestion of, hey, maybe you should throw this game, they're not going to.
No, because they got a chance also to be the number one seed still.
Yeah, I mean, it's not likely, but it's a chance. And as long as there's a chance, you know, the proverbial, so you're saying there's a chance. You know, the Sharks have got to play this game out, and they're going to play it out and win it. This won't be a close game. This will not be a game that's decided by less than 20 points, in my opinion.
Jacksonville has owned this series since they came into the league. They're leading the all-time series 6-1. The last time the Tampa Bay won was back in March of 2012, and that was by a grand total of 2 points. To me, you make a good point in all shapes and forms when you talk about, you know, throwing in. Do you want to? I think Jacksonville is going to win this game too. I feel bad for Tampa Bay, but it's, you know, they're in, and it's, you know, it sucks. Two totally different teams win AD Mack. Basically, AD Mack got all the wins. Since AD Mack went down, they're 0-for. So it's disheartening.
And they're 0-for, and they've gotten killed in some of those games.
Yep. Yes, they have. Arizona. I think this is going to be a very pissed off team. They're going in to play the Barnstormers this week. I think, you know, Coach Guy has always said he's going to continue to play his players. After what happened last week and the rant that we heard earlier, I got a feeling he wants to make sure that everything is done properly. I wonder if how badly of a beating Arizona is going to give the Barnstormers.
Another side note to this game.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder, could this be the last we see of Coach Ho?
Hmm.
Couple bad seasons in a row. He really hasn't had a great season as a coach since leaving the Rush and coming back, you know, in 2010. So, very interesting. Could he be headed to Pittsburgh? Could he be headed to retirement? Could he stay in Iowa? Very interesting situation. Barnstormers obviously have been disappointing. They were horrid last week. They couldn't even hold serve in the Bacon Bowl.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, I don't see Iowa putting up a fight in this game, especially with the way that Arizona played last week. So I think, yes, I agree with you. This is going to be a pissed off Arizona team. Will they play for four quarters? I tend to doubt they're going to play for a full four quarters, but damn, could it be 70-15 or something like that by the time that fourth quarter rolls around? You betcha it could. Yeah.
By the way, I was actually thinking also that good thing that it was the Bacon Bowl last week and it wasn't the Whiskey Bowl, because if the game had occurred on a Sunday, they wouldn't have been able to hold the trophy. Sorry. if you don't know what I'm talking about, look up Utah and Sundays and Mormons. You'll understand what I'm talking about. Philadelphia travels to San Antonio.
Could it be the last game in San Antonio Talon's history?
Very possible, too. And by the way, this game is the CBS Network Game of the Week, CBS Sports Network Game of the Week. It's too bad they weren't able to. The game's not televised in Orlando, you know, but they could easily. It's frustrating.
Hey, the only ways you're going to know what's going on in Orlando is either AFL Live, good luck with that, or our Facebook, our Twitter, the team's Twitter and all that, or you just join us in the chat room, because for as long as the internet holds up, and last week or 2 weeks ago it didn't hold up so well for me, for as long as the internet holds up, we'll be doing play-by-play in the chat room.
Yep, exactly. But
anyway, back to this Philly-San Antonio game. Yeah, how many times did Rohan Davey can turn the ball over in this one?
First time they've ever met in league these two teams' histories. San Antonio, they really, you know, they would have to, as we know, they have to come out and they got to blow this Philadelphia team out. It's not going to happen. I think the true Rohan Davey showed up last week. I mean, it was deplorable.
And the Talons didn't even suit another quarterback last week. They just went with Rohan Davey.
I know.
So, I mean, if that's the route you're going to go, good luck against Philadelphia. You know, the perk that San Antonio has and the way that San Antonio wins games is by getting that defense and getting Joe Sykes and getting Tim McGill up the field in the face of the quarterbacks. Just one problem. Philly's only allowed 6 sacks all season long. Mm-hmm. So it's a horrid matchup for San Antonio any way you slice it. And the Talons are going to get killed in this game.
Yep.
Unless Philadelphia does come out with the intensity of, hey, you know what, let's take care of business, let's be the number one seed, and let's get this one done with as quickly as possible, this game will not be funny going into the fourth quarter, just like last week's game was not overly funny. But yeah, could be the last game in the history of the San Antonio Talons.
Exactly. Cleveland travels to Utah. Jason Boltz was actually placed on the IR, so this is once again Tommy Grady's team.
Again, could it be the last game in the history of the Utah Blaze?
Yeah.
A very decent possibility that's the case. I don't believe so, but I'd say there's definitely a sentiment for that. Cleveland won its game last week. You know, Cleveland. That was its Super Bowl, beating Orlando, keeping Orlando out of the playoffs for the time being.
Yep.
You know, last game in front of the hometown crowd, had a decent crowd that night. I don't know whether Cleveland's going to really want to come play at Utah. Yep. I really don't. But then again, you know, Utah really hasn't shown much either. I'll give the benefit of the doubt and say maybe Tommy Grady puts together one more decent game. Could be the last time we see him in Utah as well.
And you know what? Considering that he has not thrown an interception since he was benched, hey, he actually, the way how AG plays, it may actually be all good. He may actually, they may have not, you know, he won't break that, you know, he won't get anywhere near the record that AG currently holds. So, for interceptions in a year. Last game of the regular season. Wow. Last game of the regular season. Chicago. Hometown Chicago?
The hosting Chicago Rush at the SAP Pavilion.
Play the San Jose Sabercats.
This game really, I mean, this game is the most perplexing game. Because look, you know what Cleveland, Utah, they're going to play all out because they got nothing else to play for. Same thing with Iowa. You know Iowa's going to play all out. San Antonio's going to play to the best of its abilities. Are either Chicago or San Jose really going to care about this game?
I think they just want to make sure.
Let's face the facts.
Yeah.
You know, San Jose got blown out last week, so it's going to want a better performance than that. But at what expense? I mean, would it really surprise anybody if you saw Luke Drone against Mitch Mustaine for most of this game? I would say probably not, especially if you're Chicago. Damn, you got to turn around and play in Spokane in 5 days.
Yeah, and the thing, too, coming off such an emotional win last week, I got a feeling that the Chicago's going to come into this game possibly on a little bit of a low. I said, so big of a
Yeah, and how many times can you travel back and forth to the West Coast?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's surprisingly, you know, in the history of these two teams, it's almost identical. San Jose leads a series overall 7-6. San Jose has won the last two. Then Chicago won the last two. It's been a series of runs so far. You know, recently these games have been somewhat close, but it's, you know what? I would not be surprised. San Jose wins this game. They want to be able to come in and on a high, into the playoffs on a high note. It's not saying Chicago doesn't, but I got a feeling for me, I think Chicago's going to come in because of their win last week, their huge win last week. They're going to come in a little bit low, and I think San Jose is going to win this game. So that's what I think. And then comes the postseason. That's for another week, right, Adam?
Yeah.
That's for next week. Obviously, we want to thank Chris Dixon. We want to thank Coach Doug Plank. We want to thank all of you for your questions. It should have been an absolute joy to do this show this week. I think it's, I think we've set a precedent for the year. I mean, what can I say? We've had some great interviews, but it's, we're not.
We got more coming.
Exactly.
We got a big one planned.
Exactly. And we're not done yet. We are not done yet at all. Obviously there are ways that you can contact us. Me, tim.capra@arenafan.com. adam@adam.markowitz@arenafan.com. Adam, before we go, any last thoughts?
I'm going to take two parting shots here, and the first one is going to be a parting shot on the AFL. There is a possibility that every single team in the National Conference will have a better record than the New Orleans Voodoo, who would be getting into the playoffs at 6-12 if they get in. AFL, you got this wrong, and you got this so badly wrong, it's not even funny. San Antonio should be in the playoffs. Iowa and Utah should both still be fighting for playoff spots. It's not fair. There should not have just been one crossover. The whole freaking American Conference should have crossed over this year. So I'll take the shot at that. I love the way it's panned out because I've got all the drama with New Orleans and Orlando. It never should have come to it. AFL, do the right thing next season and let the best eight teams get in the playoffs. I don't care about conferences. You don't play different brands of baseball like they do, or different brands of football like they do in Major League Baseball. This is something that they play the exact same game. It should be the best eight teams in the league if you're going to have eight teams in, and that's just the way that it should be. So you don't end up in a situation where a team that could finish 500 gets left home, whereas a team that's 6-12 playing 333 football could get into the playoffs. So that's the first shot I'm going to take. Second one on a much lighter topic. I know normally I cross sports here. I'm not going to do that tonight. I'd like to thank 740 in Orlando for letting me on several times over the course of this year. Most recently this morning I was on with the open mic getting a chance to talk about the Predators and this game against the Voodoo this weekend. So, you know, thank you to 740. Thank you to 91.5 FM, whom I've been on this week. Thank you to Captain and Company. I've interviewed with them this year. Thank you to my buddy Carson Engel, who has me on his show every now and again. And I look forward to doing as many interviews as anyone would like me to have anywhere in the country. I love talking about this game and having the opportunity to promote it. And if I could even just get one more fan out there to that game on Saturday night, I will have done my job with these interviews. So thank you so much to all these radio stations who have let me talk about this great game on their mediums.
Perfect. So for everybody here at the AFL Tonight family, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.